You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our review of Atomic Blonde.
I chose this life, and someday it's going to get me killed. But not today.
Lorraine Broughton, expert in intelligence collection and hand-to-hand combat.
Agent Gascoigne was killed last night. Did you know him?
Enough to say hello.
He had an atomic bomb of information. Find out who's hunting our operatives and trust no one.
David Persons, your contact.
Welcome to Berlin. I'm David. Don't shoot. I've got your shoe. Your own
personal Jesus. That was me from the moment my feet touched the ground.
This was never part of the plan.
It was part of mine.
I've lost the target.
What do you know about this woman who's been following me?
You look like you need saving.
So you made contact with the French operative?
Obviously.
The clock is ticking, and everyone you get close to ends up dead.
Someone set me up. Someone from the inside. Now, this only ends one way. A bullet. Ready for
action. All right, everybody, you were just listening to the trailer for Atomic Blonde, and the story is as follows. Agent Lorraine Broughton, who's played by Charlize Theron, is equal parts spycraft, sensuality, and savagery, willing to deploy any of her skills to stay alive on an impossible mission. Sent alone into Berlin to retrieve a priceless dossier from within the de-established city, she partners with Embedded Station Chief David Percival, played by James McAvoy, to navigate her way through a deadly game of spies. The film is starring Charlize Theron, James McAvoy, John Goodman. It is directed by David Leitch and written by Kurt Johnson. Joining me for this review, I have Jorge from thesplashreport.com.
Hi, everybody. How's it going?
So, Jorge, the reason why I wanted to take you onto this episode is because I actually saw the film with you.
That's right. That's right.
And to be fair and totally honest, I'm having a hard time articulating my thoughts about this film, quite frankly, because I'm not really entirely sure I know exactly what went on in this movie's plot.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit, you know, without giving away too much, I mean, it's based on a book, and it has the parallel structure where she's in a room kind of telling the story of what happened, and then you see the story of what happened, and the story of what happened is a very intricate spy, you know, kind of James Le Carre style, everyone betrays everybody, you can't trust anybody kind of story. So it's a little, you know, you have to pay attention and try to keep everything straight because it is certainly intricate, let's say.
Yeah, there's double crossings, triple crossings, quadruple crossings, and the twists and turns that unravel themselves by the point when the film gets to like its ending. I was completely like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I just, at a certain point, I just drew my hands up because I could not handle how overly convoluted this story was. And needlessly, too, might I add, it kind of fuels together ultimately what my thoughts are on the film. And that is that I think this film is way too in love with itself.
Yeah, I mean, and just to finish up a little bit on the convolutedness, it's not just that it's convoluted. I mean, you can, you know, let's say that, you know, you just sit there and write everything down, you follow it. But in fact, and again, I'm not trying to give anything away, but if you actually look at it, there's a couple of parts that are just not logically correct. If you, when you're watching kind of all the reveals at the end, and the way that they went down in time, it's actually, you know, she's doing things that she would not be doing if she knew certain things that she claims to know, things like that. It's actually illogical, which is why you probably felt like you're confused, because your brain is telling you, like, this cannot possibly be happening.
Right. No, that's exactly the way it was going down. I just, like, had this dumbfounded look on my face of, like, what? You know?
Right. Well, let's say some nice things about the movie. You know, it's very stylish, and Charlize Theron is great. I'm sure we'll get to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in terms of the stylish, I don't know about you, but I was very much reminded of Suicide Squad recently for some reason.
It has that style, you know, of that some sort of color that transcends the whole picture.
Neon colors definitely pop out in a very big way against, like, a very drab, desaturated European, you know, backdrop. Mm-hmm. And the music choices also reminded me of Suicide Squad. That they were very obvious, very pronounced. They drew attention to themselves. And I can't help but feel like they were inserted as a means to make up for the plot's convoluted shortcomings. Yeah. As a, you know, so that 16-year-old, 17-year-old boys and girls that go see this movie, you know, and they can't really follow the plot, they're still somewhat interested in what's going on because of the mayhem, violence, and, oh, look at that pop 80s song. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I mean, you can accuse a lot of movies of doing that, right? Like, I think Baby Driver fairly kind of does that a little bit, but just to more.
But Baby Driver's trying to do it as a stylistic choice in terms of its editing and its sound, and that's really like a filmmaker's exercise. This just seems like, you know, somebody who, I don't know, somebody who, like, just got out of college and, you know, is still, like, into that frat boy, oh, this is what makes a cool movie, you know, and throws all these ideas together, and this is what you get.
Right. And speaking of the things, you know, it also reminds me a little bit of the Neon Demon, in fact, from last year, the neon colors and the Berlin scenes have a little bit of the Steven Spielberg movie with Mark Rylance, you know, Bridge of Spies. It has that Cold War kind of feel to it a little bit. So it has all of those elements. It clearly, you know, he's clearly a student of film, but I agree with you that some of it is just, he's just doing it because he can, because he wants to. There's no actual purpose to it. And
right.
The loud banging tunes are in that category.
Yeah. You know, before you were mentioning, too, about Charlize in this movie. My God. Holy God.
She's amazing. I mean, you know, she really steals the movie. And if it weren't for her, it would not be... I would even say, you know, skip it altogether. But, you know, if you're a fan of hers, you'll certainly have a good time. I mean, she's... You know, she's really proven that she's, like, she has her chops in terms of, like, a kind of badass girl. Sorry, I'm not supposed to swear, but, you know, Mad Max, all sorts of movies like that where she's getting very physical and she's good at it. You know, she's good at it, and she walks into the room and you just kind of want to stare at her, and she has this little furtive look about her and her pursed lips, and then all of a sudden she gets really physical. So it's a good contrast, right, between her, like, angelic looks and her more diabolic moves, let's say.
First of all, you can fucking swear on my podcast. I will allow
it. Okay, good.
Second of all, this is a very interesting performance, because on one level I could see how people would say that this is a great performance in terms of the dramatics. And on another end, it's a great performance because of the physicality.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you two questions. First question, where does it rank within Charlize Theron's filmography as far as her catalog of performances is concerned? And two, who would win in a fight, John Wick or Lorraine?
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. No question. I think Lorraine would win. That's an easy one. She's just, you know, I did see the last one. I think he has more of a reliance on the gun than she does. So I guess if he got to the gun first, but she's really, really physical in the film. And I think she'd win.
Yeah. You know, talking about that physicality before you answered, you have a question too. One thing I really liked about this is that she wasn't necessarily kicking men's ass based on strength alone. She was using the environment around her, her wits, and anything that she could get her hands on. And that made the fights seem more plausible. And she gets her ass kicked a lot in this movie, too.
Right.
I mean, it was brutal at times to watch. So I definitely felt there was more of a plausible, realistic sense of the fighting in this. With that said, though, I think John Wick maybe has better choreography simply because there were times when watching this where I felt like the stuntmen who were getting beat up by Charlize, I felt like they were waiting to get hit.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem that could also be just due to camera placement. You know, like, it, you know, and usually a lot of times in fight scenes, you might have a little bit of shaky handheld cam to disguise some of the choreographed parts of the fight sequence. You know, because otherwise, right, as an audience member, you can tell a lot of times when somebody just got hit in the face and then she's hitting somebody else. And that guy that just got hit in the face is kind of waiting his turn to rush in on his cue.
Right. Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very good observation, though, about how she uses the environment and the like the objects around her. Like, there's a scene that I think people have seen in the trailer with like a hose.
Or her shoe.
Yeah. And her shoe. Right. Exactly. No, those are pretty well done. And, you know, she's so beautiful and they dress her up. You know, to look great, and then they beat, you know, the shit out of her. And but she's like, she's into it. You know, she's obviously kind of enjoying herself. There's a scene when she's in the, you know, quote unquote interrogation room where she's talking about like how horrible that whole experience was for her. And she just really conveys the sense of like, you fuckers, screwed me over. And she's all bruised up and everything. And it works. It's effective.
Yeah.
So, in terms of where it ranks, I mean, it's pretty up there. You know, like, she's been on a lot, obviously, and of course, Monster is Monster. You know, but I mean, North Country, I guess, is one of her other, you know, signature performances. I loved her in Young Adult. I know that movie was very controversial. Some people.
Oh yeah, she's great in that.
But you know, I mean, Mad Max, I would say, but like, I mean, I would put this one maybe in the top five, maybe. I mean, am I missing something? You know.
No, I think with the performances that you actually just named right there, those five, I think it belongs in there too. I think that she is such a commanding presence in this movie, and she truly gives it her all, and that is evident when you watch it on screen. That yeah. She is just, man, I hope she got paid a lot for this movie because she just looks like she got her ass whooped.
There's a movie you might remember it that I really enjoyed that, you know, was even like, it was a Paul Haggis movie like a couple years after Crash called In the Valley of Elah that I remember.
Yes, with Tommy Lee Jones. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was pretty good in that one. You know, it's a smaller film, a little more of an emotional role, I guess, in some ways.
Sure, sure.
But a lot of the stuff that she's been in, you know, she's been in a lot of kind of like action movie, right? Wasn't she in The Italian Job, and now she's in The Fast and the Furious? Mm-hmm. She's good in that one, by the way. I mean, she was. I like her as a villain. I certainly do.
I love her as that campy, hamming it up villain in Fate of the Furious. I thought she was phenomenal in that.
Yeah, and in a way, like this character, you know, like this character is obviously the good, you know, the good guy, the good girl, you know. But she has villain-like qualities in the sense that, like, you know, she's just like kicking everybody's ass like everyone else is. She just happens to be on our side.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you on that one for sure. We have to bring it up. It has to be mentioned. The stairway fight sequence in this film.
Oh yeah.
Already pretty much entered into like legendary status as far as modern day fight sequences are concerned. It's getting like the same amount of buzz as kind of like this is the scene that makes the movie. As let me think of a good example, the the bathroom sequence in Eastern Promises, let's say.
Oh my God. Holy crap. That one's memorable.
It's just that one scene in a movie that really, really, really just stands out from the rest. And it's it's like its own short film in a way.
Yeah.
As part of the movie. So like the way David Leitch, I don't know how you say his last name, but co-director on the first John Wick film, he'll be doing Deadpool 2 next.
Mm-hmm, right. Yep.
He chooses to try to give us the illusion that he's doing this in a one-er. There are hidden edits in there, and if you look closely, you could definitely spot them. But man, oh man, you know, I'm telling you, lately it just seems like whenever you're making an action film, if you have a one-er, that's like straight to a critic's heart. You know, yeah. Critics like see a one-er and they're just like over the moon about it. And I'm wondering if it's going to start to become like an overused cliche. But man, it probably won't be because they're just so hard to pull off and they keep on trying to do different things in these movies where they're trying to top the last one-er that they saw. And man, this is like one of the most brutal and vicious and chaotic Warners I think I've ever seen.
No, I remember vividly sitting there and being like, oh my God, what's happening here? And like, it just kept going and going and going. It's pretty good. I mean, if you're into that, you know, and by the way, let's say this, I mean, a lot of people are really into the John Wick movies. And if you're into that movie, I think you'll be into this one. You know, if you just kind of can put up with the, you know, convoluted plot issues. But it's certainly better than anything in that one. So people that are into those kind of action sequences are going to be thrilled.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also funny, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's either the John Wick style. It's kind of like, you know, I think that, you know, what it's going to be like kind of in the very first opening scene where like there's a big physical encounter between a car and a human being. And when you see it, you're like, oh, okay, this is what it's going to be like, you know? It's funny. I mean, it's not meant to be funny specifically, but it evokes this kind of natural reaction of like gasp horror, and the way the movie treats it elicits some sort of like internal chuckle, I guess, if that's a good way to describe it.
Oh yeah, I mean, like that sequence is so exhausting for both Charlize and whoever it is she ends up fighting for a little bit at the long stretch there towards the end. That when they're like panting and they're getting ready to go at it again, I mean, we as an audience were just like, whew, oh man, like this is still going, you know. But it was good though. I mean, if the whole movie was just that, I actually would have liked the movie a lot more, but.
Yeah.
The action set pieces are kind of spread out and they're very few and far in between, unfortunately. I think the trailers have done a good job of highlighting those aspects of the film and make you think that it's going to have a frantic pace. But man, the pacing in this movie, I think, is all over the map. And I think it just drags for long, long stretches at a time, usually.
Yeah, my issue with that is I was not sure why this or that character was even in this film. You know, like, what's the purpose of this person? What's the purpose of that person? Then you realize, basically, they have no purpose. It's all just kind of like this swirling semi-plot, and it's kind of a showcase for her. But it's frustrating because, you know, this person comes back in, and they're usually, you know, if it's Shane McAvoy, he's scowling, and it's like, okay, enough of the scowl. And if it's Sofia Boutella, you know, she's pouting, and it's like, okay, enough of the pouting. It's just like, over and over again, these characters come in. And if it's, you know, John Goodman and what is it, Toby Jones, I guess, is the other one. You know, they're sitting there like pounding the table and it gets kind of repetitive. She's the only one that actually exhibits range and, you know, volatility in her. Even though, you know, it's, you know, three or four tones, but she kind of moves around between them. It's frustrating. You know, why are these people in this movie? What is their point?
Yeah, no, I feel you on that. I mean, I'll admit, James McAvoy, I think, is having a pretty solid year overall. And this isn't the worst performance I've ever seen him give or anything like that. He's not bad in the film. It's just that I don't think the script gives him enough to make that character fully fleshed out.
Yeah.
There is a messy fight sequence he has, like, towards the end of the film involving a knife where I actually thought that he looked like, from a physicality standpoint, he was having a tremendous amount of fun with the role. I just felt like completely underwhelmed by every single character that was not Charlize.
Right. And I mean, well, James McAvoy's a fantastic actor. You're talking about Split, I suppose. I mean, he's great. And, you know, John Goodman's great every time he shows up in one of those
movies. Oh, yeah.
So they win Best Picture somehow. It's like, they're all great, but it's just that you're completely correct. The script, it's the script.
Yeah.
It's the big missing link in this whole thing. And it really shows you how, you know, it's a central piece of making a movie. As obvious as that sounds, it just kind of, everything else kind of like can fall apart. I hope we're not sounding too down on it, but it is really kind of like, you really want to, maybe it also has to do with expectations. I mean, when you see such well choreographed scenes, such well put together cinematography and sound, and, you know, setting aside the issue with the choice of the songs and not to speak of Charlize, you're expecting a little bit more, I think. I think the movie can be its own worst enemy in a sense when it's, you know, there's so many bells and whistles that at the end of it, you're like, okay, what did I just hear from all those bells and whistles? And you're like, nothing.
You know, it's funny, you just mentioned the cinematography for a second here. And that was another thing too, where I actually liked the cinematography in this movie. I thought that there were some very creative uses of lighting and color that that just really gave this film a very distinct look to it that I very much appreciated at times. But then there would be something really bizarre and weird, like the camera is horizontal and it yes. then tilts to like a vertical angle, and I'm just like, why?
Oh my God, that annoyed me so much.
That exact shot, actually, right?
Yeah. There's a couple, and I was like, is the point to make me dizzy? Because I already am a little bit sick to my stomach from all this, like, blood everywhere. The shot from above and then the 360, about that, I was like, what? I actually put that in my review. I was very annoyed by that. That's another example of what you were saying earlier of just, like, you know, we're doing it because we can. And it's like, look, we're moving the camera around.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, that just comes back to my original thoughts about how, like, I feel like this film is just way too in love with itself of, oh, look what we could do, like you said, so.
Yeah, so I think what I ascribe this kind of to is, like, filmmakers that are still kind of finding their style and their place, because there's some good things about the cinematography, not just the lighting, but, like, the way that, I mean, we talked about this a minute ago, the way that they shoot the fighting scenes, I mean, he zooms in on her and then zooms out when, like, the body's coming, you know, as you said, like, I thought that the cinematography, for example, and I think he did John Wick as well, mm-hmm. I like the fight sequence cinematography. So he's excited, he's in love with himself, he's excited, you know, he's a good filmmaker, he likes what he's doing, and he kind of gets carried away a little bit. He's doing it in the fight sequences, and then he kind of feels the need to carry it over into the other sequences, and you're like, no, stop.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you on that for sure. Let's talk about final thoughts. Great out of 10. Any Oscar potential? Take it away.
Final thoughts. A good movie. Great movie if you're a Charlize Theron fan. You know, definitely watch it. Don't expect too much out of it other than kind of some pulpy entertainment. I would give it a 6 out of 10. And Oscar potentials, I would be shocked. I don't see any nominations, to be honest. There could be, I suppose, maybe some sound nominations, but I think that field's going to be crowded. There's a lot of action movies this year, so
yeah,
I would be shocked if there's anything in there.
That's fair. I truthfully believe that this is the kind of film that Quentin Tarantino would probably be like, you know, you got to go see this movie. Charlize is amazing in it. Like, you know, he would just be so about this. From a stylistic standpoint, from the fact that, yes, if you are a Charlize Theron fan, you should definitely check this one out because she is worth the price of admission alone. The film screenplay is its downfall 100% in that it doesn't fully flesh out all of the other characters. It's convoluted too much at certain times. I also feel, too, that maybe if you take a look at it from another standpoint and you say to yourself, all right, well, the screenplay isn't convoluted, well, then director David Leitch just didn't do a good job of conveying the finer points of that screenplay then as a director, and instead focused too much on other things to give the film a cool and slick look and really try to disguise the screenplay shortcomings with these fight sequences, the music, and so on and so forth. So I definitely think it's a film that probably, maybe a lot, I don't know, maybe in post they, you know, tried their best, but this is the finished product and this is what it is. It's not something that I will be revisiting anytime soon, and it's not also something that I full-heartedly recommend. However, if you're looking for an action film to go see in theaters right now and you've seen everything else, including Wonder Woman for like the 14th time, then by all means, check out Atomic Blonde, especially if you're a Charlize Theron fan. I give this film a 5 out of 10. And as far as any Oscar potential is concerned, yeah, nah. No way. Sound categories, you never know with those categories. It's true. Something could always pop in or another, but yeah, no, there's nothing here. If this film was a lot better and I was giving it like an 8 or a 9 out of 10, you know, maybe I'd be calling for some sort of a production design or something to do with the sound or something along those lines. But as it is and as it stands, absolutely not. Charlize Theron will probably get a Critics' Choice nomination for Best Actress in an Action Movie? Right.
A Golden Globe comedy nomination, probably.
But, you know, this film is not an awards player whatsoever. So, but hey, you know what? It's something to go see right now if this is your kind of thing. Okay, Jorge, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, as you said at the beginning, I critic for thesplashreport.com. My Twitter is at jdonburnham. That's B-I-R-N-A-M. And I'm also on Instagram at awardspredicts with an X at the end.
Damn, you were able to snag that handle? Nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, actually, in and of itself.
Most people haven't, like, most people that are doing awards things aren't really on Instagram, which I find interesting. I mean, it's a harder medium, but... I enjoy it because you kind of just like, it's a short little nuggets.
Yeah, I'm. It's funny you say that. I'm actually thinking about expanding my Instagram postings a little bit more too, because normally it's just like postings of stuff that gets put on the site. But
yeah,
you're right. It's definitely an unexplored medium. So all you aspiring bloggers out there, listen to what we're saying. We're giving you tips. In any event, though, I'm could be found on all the social media networks at Next Best Picture. You've been listening to our review of Atomic Blonde here on the Next Best Picture podcast, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, Player FM, and CastBox. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. We would certainly appreciate that. And we will see you all next time.